Warning. The following broadcast you're about to listen to is filled to the brim with explicit adult language and content. Don't like it? Don't listen to it. Don't complain about it. Just ignore it. If you like it or don't mind it, then listen up and enjoy the show. Welcome to the Regimental Vox, a podcast dedicated to all things Warhammer and wargaming in general. I am your host and Vox operator for the evening, Caleb Meyer. It is Monday, April 12th, 2021. This is episode 84. Some of you may have noticed that episode 83 was up and then it was down for a while. I got it back up and running. I had some quality issues I was not very happy about, but I got it as happy as I can be with it. So we're just going to move on from there and call it a call as far as that thing goes. Not saying it's a bad episode by any stretch, just I had some issues with it, but I've done what I could. So, but the past is the past. Let us get into the current now and the coming future. Let's go ahead and talk about what's going on in my neck of the woods. Not a whole fuck of a lot, as usual. Krista and I are still balls deep on our Blackstone Fortress campaign. We're almost there, actually. We've realized that we made a lot of rules fuck-ups that we're now pretty confident that we're getting it right now. Some of the fuck-ups we made were making our lives way more difficult, but other ones were making it way too fucking easy. We've pretty confident that we've resolved all of it at this point. If anything, some of it's just trying to unlearn the mistaken way of doing it. More than anything else, a lot of it boils down to, as we all know, that GW sometimes is not the greatest at, rules lawyering, proofing the shit out of their rules. they're really bad about, because things are written in such a specific fashion, it's really easy to say, well, this could be what they meant. But the way that the actual English is written out, the way the sentence is written, in the order that it's written, suggests this instead. But this doesn't make any sense versus that. As far as, once again, some things that we were accidentally making way too fucking easy on ourselves. And when you kind of break it down, it's like, okay, like for example, I admit I'm paraphrasing right now, so it's going to sound like, well, that seems simple enough. But there's a rule in there as far as like bringing on enemy reinforcements. And if a hostile group is completely wiped out, then you deploy them from a portal and closest to the closest explorer, as close to the closest explorer as possible. Okay. The thing is that the way it's written suggests you can pick any portal on the board as long as the model is put in the hex that is closest to the next closest explorer. It does not specify it. The way it's worded does not say specifically that it must be the closest portal to the nearest explorer. Just that it needs to be, I think it actually even says pick any portal and deploy them as close to an explorer as possible, which sounds very specifically like, okay, any portal? All right, well, I'm going to put it over on this end of the map where none of my explorers are at, and now the enemy has to march all the way the fuck across. You know, we don't have a fifth player, so we're playing it ourselves. Admittedly, like, I've decided to amp up the difficulty even by specifically playing it as if I was the fifth player trying to crush the shit out of us What would I do with my behaviorals? How would I maximize my damages? So on and so forth. And it's definitely made it a lot harder. Plus with, like I said, the rules fixes, it's like, ah, fuck. Okay. But it's made it more interesting. We were already loving it. We're loving it more now. It's frustrating. It can be stressful, but that's half the fun, admittedly, too. So we haven't gotten our copy of Curse City quite yet. Looking forward to getting that, though, very, very much so. It's going to be badass. We're going to have a lot of fun with that. So, but other than that, that's about it as far as the In My Neck of the Woods. So let's get into the newsy bits, shall we? Not a whole lot of, like, you know, really crunchy stuff in the past week since the last since the last episode. There has been quite a bit of, like, model announcements, though. Just random one-off things and whatnot. And then some stuff that we were previewed not that long ago is now available for pre-order. So, and there's some upcoming stuff, too, that's pretty cool. But for right now, as far as what you can pre-order, and obviously Curse City came out this weekend, this past weekend. But as far as what you can pre-order right now, there's the Warhammer Underworlds two-player starter set alongside essential cards. So if you're, you know, looking to get started in Underworlds and haven't gotten around to it yet, it's a good way to get started. But in my opinion, the coolest part is the Crimson Court. So this set is available to pre-order. A perfect thing if you are going to play Underworld, Underworlds, and want to go with the, you know, doing some vampire shit. But at the same time, if you just want to have some cool-ass vampire models, especially if you're planning an upcoming Soulblight Gravelords army, not to name any names, you know, you could pick these models up now before GW fucks you over and puts them out of print, and makes them, you know, dick all impossible to find. GW's been really bad about that shit, in general lately. And then they wonder why the scalping market is so bad. Yeah, you know, we'll see if that actually becomes the case or not, whether or not it actually becomes hard to find them. So, but for right now, let's just presume as much. But yeah, that's as far as what's pre-orderable. Oh, and excuse me, I take it back. There, for those who are interested, there is some more Blood Bowl stuff. Namely, there is the new Thunder Valley Greenskins, as well as a companion book, Death Zone, that will be available for pre-order. Some new dice. Oh, and Underworlds has new dice as well. Let's see here. What else we got? We've got some human empire-y dudes. Looking rather human and empire-y. Imperial nobility, as they call it, apparently. Yeah. I mean, it's just dudes. There's some referees you can pre-order. I accidentally hit a wrong button and skipped past all the shit, the rest of the shit on this pre-order. I do apologize for anybody listening going, what the fuck's he talking about? There's more to pre-order. Then we lastly have the, Warmaster Titan for Adeptus Titanicus. This thing, comparison-wise, is fucking huge, even compared to a Warlord Titan. So, it should be, pretty fucking neat to have one of these bastards on your table. I'm really wanting to, you know, I've been really thinking more that I really need to buckle down and build the rest of my Titanicus shit and actually play this fucking game, but I haven't yet, so I'm not going to pre-order a Warmaster Titan because I haven't been playing the base game anyways, so, but I want to. Yeah, so that's it for pre-orders. As far as, and one other thing before I get into the new models and stuff, one thing that I didn't see on the community site here and stuff, but that it's still really cool. There's a, I think it's called Stormground. It's a upcoming, it's like the first full-on PC Age of Sigmar game. PC as in personal computer, not as in politically correct. Let's see here. Pull up the name to make sure I'm not saying fucking dumb shit. Warhammert. Oh, Stormground. Yes, Stormground. I had it right. It is pre-orderable right now. You do get a discount if you pre-order on Steam right now, 15% off. But they just a few days ago announced the release date, May 27th, so a month and a half from now. The big thing is they actually also, in turn with the reveal trailer, announced a third faction. So they had initially announced Stormcast and Nighthaunt, which is both A, unsurprising, but B, pretty cool, to see the two mainline, I guess, you know, armies from the starter set and whatnot available, at least. But they are doing a third one, and that is Maggotkin. So, yeah, I'm pretty fucking stoked about that shit. So, we'll see how it turns out, though. But I'll probably be planning to try and pick that up, or at least try it out around the time it comes out. A, because I really want to, and B, something to talk about on here. So, but moving on here, as far as minis go, there are three particular things that they've announced in just the past week, as far as cool new miniatures are concerned. The last week, I think I briefly mentioned it, I was in the middle of recording when they first made the announcement, but I didn't get to look at the models yet. There are two new Witch Hunter models coming out as part of Broken Realms. They look very similar to, what's his nuts, Jansen Darlock, I think is his name, the Witch Hunter Duder in Curse City. So, but there's two of them. They are a father-daughter duo. They look pretty badass. So, there's Galen Vendenst is the name of the Duder, and then his daughter, Duralia Vendenst. Duder man, person guy's got a torch with a pistol, you know, which obviously you expect a torch, because how are you supposed to go, you know, hunting witches if you're not going to burn them? And then he's got that pretty badass looking pistol, which is kind of, you know, the standard thing you expect out of witch hunters in, you know, Warhammer Fantasy, / Age of Sigmar. And then his daughter is actually hauling around a big ass crossbow, so that fires stakes. So not as in, you know, moo cow stakes, but you know, stakes to kill us, to kill vampires. So, but yeah, pretty cool shit. And then today they have made two new model announcements. First, they brought back the Battle Sister Bulletin. So they said that they're going to be doing this. Every couple of weeks. So probably every other week, I would guess. When they say every couple, that suggests every other, but they also didn't specify every 2 weeks. So, we'll see. But yeah, so there's a new model they showed off. Celestian Sacrosaints. Sacrosaints? Sacrosaints. Man, so one of these days I'll pronounce things properly. I think it's Sacrosaints, though. But admittedly, part of the problem is that GW's got to come up with a million different unique fucking names for everything. So, but these are looking to be armored close combat specialists. So they're armed with what looks like power halberds, basically. These giant fucking axes, axe slash spear slash fucking awesome thing that's got, you know, a power field built into it. As well as hauling around a shield with it would appear that it might have a built-in bolt gun or bolt pistol into the shield itself, maybe. Yeah, it's pretty cool looking. And yeah, they've been announcing so much new stuff for Sisters. I can't help but feel like, you know, we've talked about it, that we got the Adeptus Mechanicus Codex is supposedly next, supposedly coming up this month even, but starting to run out of Saturdays. Excuse me. God damn. I am exhausted and I apologize. As always, you know, work and shit. But anyway, as far as we know, Adeptus Mechanicus is the next codex. And then supposedly it's going to be either orcs or Adeptus Sororitas, Sisters of Battle. I would say with the amount of shit that they have announced for Adeptus Sororitas, I would think that that one is next after Adeptus Mechanicus. But on the other hand, going, you know, Imperial, then Xenos, then Imperial again would make more sense if you're going to go that route. Yeah, we'll have to see. But either way, it's almost a guarantee that we've got to be seeing a new Adeptus Sororitas book soon, between the Palatine that just came out as part of Piety and Pain, which they did not initially provide power levels or points values for the Palatine. And it does say on here that they didn't do that, and then it says they're set to appear in a future publication, so probably, once again, that codex we were just talking about. But they did now add the power level and points, so she is power level 3, 45 points, plus 5 points for the plasma pistol, if you armor with that, which, admittedly, while the Palatine, it's kind of weird, the Palatine sprue does include other parts to build her in different configurations, but not enough parts to actually build her in different configurations. So, because she's supposed to be able to have, like, a bolt pistol and some other shit, if I remember correctly, but she has to have the bolt pistol with something else. I don't remember right off the top of my head, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. But either way, there's not enough parts to actually build her in the other configuration, which is kind of fucking weird that they included some of the parts, but not all of them. So I would think that whenever the Palatine becomes a model that's available separately from Piety and Pain, the sprue will either be a completely different looking model, or they'll just throw in the stuff that's missing, but that seems almost kind of silly too. It's not much, it's only like one or two parts, but without, you can't really do a whole fucking lot, so. But anywho, yeah, so there's that shit, and then the big thing today, Age of Sigmar, Lord Croak is returning to the Seraphon, and holy shit, this model looks fucking crazy. Probably, I would guess, like the Silent King and other big giant centerpiece models, he's going to be very fucking expensive. But he is fucking crazy looking. Plus, it looks like there's different build options for him, probably to do, probably to do stuff beyond just Croak himself. But yeah, he's got one where he's got his big old giant crowny thingy. It actually looks like it's just the same dude. It's not like building a generic character option. It just lets you build him without the giant headdress. So, but yeah, if you haven't checked out this model, head on over to the community site, or you can hit up the Warhammer TV YouTube. They have a video, and actually I would say that the checking it out on the video is worthwhile in comparison, because you can actually see the depth of this model. The picture does not do it justice. The picture on the that they have, while it looks crazy and awesome, it doesn't do the actual, give you the idea of just how third dimensional this figure is overall. So definitely check that one out. So, but yeah, other than that, that's about it for the newsy bits. Let's see here. Make sure I didn't miss anything that I wanted to cover. Yeah, nope, nothing else that I'm seeing right now. So, gonna take a quick break. When we come back from the break, we're gonna start on a fairly base level introduction to the new Codex Drukhari, and then I'll talk more about my plans as far as that goes. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the Regimental Vox. As I mentioned before the break, we're gonna get to a very, very base level introduction on Codex Drukhari today. My intention and plan is, admittedly, probably next week's episode will actually be a much longer episode than most of the other ones. Either that, or I'll be breaking it up over several weeks. Because, yeah, this codex is quite complicated. And I don't say that in a negative fashion. I mean, it's just very complicated. It's a more advanced codex compared to the other ones that have come out so far. It's not necessarily like way stupidly overpowered compared to the other books and stuff. I feel like at least from trolling through it and everything as I have so far, it's got its own comparative, bend. Once again, proving that GW is definitely putting a lot into the ninth edition books. They're basically taking everything and the kitchen sink and putting it into these books. The Drukhari book, though, is very, very complex. It's not necessarily bigger than other books, especially when you compare it to, like, say, the Codex Space Marines, which is a massive fucking Bible of a goddamn book. This one's pretty, it's relatively the same, of similar thickness. What makes it so complex is the way it handles things like warlord traits, factions, so on and so forth. Namely, I would say that other, in fact, I wouldn't even just say it. It's pretty much factual information. The other codexes, they kind of emphasize and encourage going like bigger detachments and going for the same faction across the board, your preferred sub faction basically within your faction. Not necessarily 100%. They definitely don't want you to mix and match by keyword. They don't want you to only build, to build a force that's, Imperial. So you got Mechanicus and Space Marines and Sisters running around and shit. You can build it that way. They don't want you to, though. The rules are written to encourage you to stick with your faction, your army specifically. And generally speaking, to maximize the potential of your army, it's generally a good idea to have just one sub-faction. Not always, but if you put too many in, you end up watering down everything and you don't get the maximum power and results. And then the other big thing is that you generally want to, this game very much so encourages single detachment. You can totally have extra detachments, but because your initial detachment with your warlord costs you 0 CP, well, technically it costs you CP, but you get refunded that CP for having your warlord in the detachment. This book, on the other hand, has options to, and it encourages you to have a shit ton of detachments. Let me explain. What you're looking at here is an army that is broken down, like within their faction. It's broken down into sub factions, but those are part of, master parent sub factions. You have the Cabals, the Witch Cults, and the Homunculus Covens, okay? Now the Cabals are primarily made of, they're led by Archons, and they're primarily made of like Kabbalite warriors and dudes of that nature. Then you've got the Witch Cults, which, as the name implies, is filled with witches. So it's primarily built, it has, primarily succubi in charge of those detachments. And then they have witches as their troops' choice. They also are primarily geared towards using like the Hellions and Reavers. Those are part of their shit. And then the Covens are led by Homunculi, and they have like racks and grotesques and stuff like that. So here's the thing. The faction keywords are broken down in such a way that technically, in order to remain fully Battleforged, as far as I can tell, you know, to get your detachment abilities, you need to have only Cabal units in a Cabal detachment, only Witch units in a Witch attachment, detachment, only Coven units in a Coven detachment. The way that this codex encourages that is, if your army is made of only patrol detachments, all of them cost zero CP. So, yes, as a Dark Eldar, Dark Eldar, that's old hat there, Drukhari player, you are going to want to have multiple tiny detachments. For multiple reasons. A, you're going to be like the only army so far that I could think of that gets to just retain all their CP for funsies, regardless of how they build the army as far as number of detachments goes. B, you are encouraged, in turn, to have three different... Once again, you, rather than just being faction and sub-faction, it's more like faction, sub-faction, and then sub-sub-faction. Sub-factions being the... you know, Cabal, Witch Cult, and Coven keywords. And then within those, you have, like, different Cabals, the same way you'd have different Space Marine chapters and shit like that. So you're actually encouraged, in order to get access to all of the units in the book, you would want to have, at bare minimum, three detachments in your army. And you would probably want to do three patrol detachments to maximize your CP. Now, granted, you do not need to do the patrol detachments if you do not want to. That you totally are not required to. In fact, they actually have another option, a real space raid, which is a detachment that has an Archon and a Succubus and a Homunculus. And... you get to then basically have three different sub-sub-factions and three different sub-factions in turn in the same detachment. You know, you could do like a battalion, but then you've got, you know, your Archon in charge of the Cabal units there, and your Witch, or your Succubus in charge of the Witch Cult units, and your Homunculus in charge of the Coven units. And each of those has a separate sub-sub-faction, you know, Cabal of the Black Heart, and the Cult of Strife, and, you know, so on and so forth. Prophets of Flesh for your covens. But there's several other choices to choose from for all of them. In turn, they actually, it's each type, Cabal, Coven, and Witch Cult, has less pre-built chapters to choose from. The sub-sub-factions, excuse me, to choose from. And they also have, like, less relics and less everything. But that's because there's so many more of them to choose from. Each of them has a smaller choice of stuff, but you have this massive plethora. You know, even, like, when it comes to your standard Warlord traits, rather than having usually... they usually do, like, six... at a time, you know, typically speaking, you have six Warlord traits that are built in to pick from. These only have three, for the Cabals, three for the Witch Cults, and three for the Covens. But then there's a whole slew of other ones that you could choose from by upgrading to a Master Archon or a Master Succubus. And then there's more depending on which, you know, which sub-sub-faction you go with. You know, the Cabal, the Black Heart has different ones from the other Cabals, and so on and so forth. You know, it's, like I said, it's a very complex, complicated, codex, but it's really fucking cool because of it. I absolutely love the fact that you are encouraged to mix and match here. That, you know, otherwise you could totally just focus on just a Witch Cult. Totally just focus on a Cabal. But you're going to be losing access to a lot of the Codex by only having an Archon. By only having a Succubus. In order to get the most out of it, you either want to make a real space raid that has one of each, or you want to make multiple patrol detachments so that you can spread the love that way too. Overall, it's a rather interesting and fascinating way to build an army. Now, keep in mind, if you have anything that's not a patrol detachment, then you don't get that whole all patrol detachments are free thing. You just, whichever detachment has your warlord would have your would have the free CP, but the rest of your detachments you'd have to pay for. So keep that in mind. But yeah, the fact that you are encouraged to, and not only encouraged to mix and match the codex and more unit types and stuff, but in turn, this book is built specifically, compared to other books, it is built specifically for you to pick different sub-factions in this case. Once again, you know, you are encouraged to pick three different chapters, essentially, to have your army made out of. Which is rather fascinating, because once again, the other books, while they don't have like a hard and fast, you must have all, you know, all Blood Angels or all Ultramarines or whatever, there's a lot of rules that encourage you to do that, and there's a lot of reasons to do that because of the way that, you know, well, this guy can't, you know, use his abilities on these dudes because they're not sharing the same keyword because they're two different chapters or something, like some shit like that. You know, there's a lot of that sort of stuff. This book, while it still has that, it's done with intention. It's done with the purpose of, we want you to bring cabals and covens and witch cults, but you're going to have to bring them all separately in their own little pockets. So, overall, it's really cool the way that's laid out. Now, like I said, it does make this very complicated, very complex, which is why we're only doing a ground level introduction to this book today, and we'll be getting more into the meat and potatoes of the actual depth of the codex on the next episode. Admittedly, I feel like in order to do this codex justice, I'm just kind of flipping through the pages once again right now. In order to do this codex justice, realistically, it would either have to be one fucking ridiculously long episode or several separate episodes. I don't really see a way around that short of cutting a bunch of corners and shit. You know, it just doesn't make sense to do that. So, but yeah, like I said, this is a really cool build. And then looking it over too, as far as, you know, the individual models, their capabilities, and so on and so forth, this army has some serious potential here. Mega fucking glass cannon. Don't get me wrong. These guys are, they are not meant to stand up in a straight up fight. They will fold like a wet paper bag under enough heavy firepower and enough heavy pressure. But that's not what they're designed to do. They do what they say on the tin, basically. They are meant to be a raiding force. Get in, strike fast, strike hard, get the fuck out. That's what they are made to do. A lot of their units and stratagems and stuff pertain specifically to things like falling back out of combat but still getting to shoot, or still getting to charge, or both. Sometimes with negative consequences, sometimes not. They have a lot of abilities that affect enemies' abilities to fall back out of combat. So if you are overwhelming and attacking an enemy, you know, that they will, you know, be unable to pull out if you are kicking their asses. They generally still can, but there's a lot of weapons and abilities and characters and shit like that that disrupt the enemy's fallback. A lot of things that encourage you to fall back and strike again. This book is built for somebody who wants to have something really fragile, but play stupidly aggressively with it. And I'm not saying it's stupid. I'm saying just that ridiculous level of just crazy amounts of aggression. You know, it really wants you to go in and beat the shit out of your opponent as fast as you fucking can, and then get the fuck out. There's a lot of, particularly in the case of, like, the witches, they have access. They have access to the power from pain. Yeah, let me just actually flip to the witch data sheet specifically right here. Now, as a side note, when I mentioned the data sheet thing, if you have access to the 40K app and you get the codex, you know, and stuff, you could, you know, as we all know, you can totally put in the code, get access to the book, etc. Unfortunately, and I know a lot of people have complained about bugs and stuff in this app before. I do feel like GW's been improving the app, taking the feedback that they get and actually, you know, doing something with it. But yeah, a lot of the Drukhari stuff is very buggy, admittedly. So keep that in mind if you're messing around with the app and expecting to have access to all sorts of stuff on the go. That's part of why I'm flipping pages right now instead of looking at the app. But anywho, just to get in this here as an example. So witches, they're, you know, they're okay to start. They have an 8-inch move, so fast. Once again, a lot of the army has some really fast moving stuff. Even its infantry tend to not be very good about just standing still. I think the slowest infantry model I've seen, most of them are 7 inches. Some are 8. Quite a few of them are 8 as well. So, yeah, this army is not designed to sit still at all. I would say that sitting still is stagnation and stagnation is death. And that is 20 times more evident in this book than any other. Yeah, it's looking like 7 inches is the slowest anything goes. Some of the vehicles, once they get damaged enough, go down to like 6 inches. But they are much faster than that to start with. So, yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. Once again, the everything is built to point towards aggressive play. They move fast. In the case of the witches, they're 3 plus weapon skill, 3 plus ballistic, strength 3, toughness 3, 1 wound, 3 attacks, leadership 7, 6 plus save. So, right up front, you've got 3 attacks on a basic witch. You know, you got 10 of them, you've got, well, 31 attacks, because out of the 10, you'd have a Hecatrix. They can go up to 20 models in total, though. So if you got a full squad of witches, assuming everybody's still alive, everybody gets into contact with an enemy in close combat, then you're looking at 61 attacks overall because of the bonus one that the Hecatrix gets. So that can be pretty fucking brutal, but it gets better. So for starters, they have the Blade Artist's ability, and that ability lets them, every time they have an unmodified wound roll of 6, their AP characteristic goes up by 1. So a lot of their basic weapons that they're running around with is not super crazy. Their basic blades are strength user, so strength 3, and then neg 1 AP, 1 damage. But each time the bearer fights, they get an additional attack. So you're actually looking at 4 for a regular witch, 5 for the Hecatrix. So you're looking at 85 attacks, 81 attacks if you're talking a full squad. So that's kind of fucking ridiculous. And then they're, you know, any unmodified 6s, they get an extra 1. So you're looking at neg 2 on the Hecatari blade. Then they have combat drugs. Combat drugs, you can either roll on a D6 chart and you get 2 of them, or you can pick one and you just get 1 of them. There are several different ones to choose from, but the ones that I find most interesting are Adrenalite, which adds 1 attack per model if they fight, make a charge, or perform a heroic intervention. So it just says each time this unit fights, if it made a charge move or performed a heroic intervention until that fight is resolved, add 1 to the attack's characteristic of models in that unit. So if you take your squad of 20, and now they've charged, that turn. You are looking at 5 attacks for basic dudes. So you're looking at 101 attacks in total now. And then there's some other combat drugs of interest. Hypex adds 2 to the move characteristics, so your witches could be moving 10 inches on foot. There's also, the ability to make them a little tougher. There's the ability to improve their ballistic skill and leadership characteristic by 1. That one seems very weak to me. And then there's also improving your weapon skill by 1. So there's a lot of good stuff here. Then they also have the Power from Pain, which each battle round, they get a new ability and it stacks with the previous one. By the time you get into turn 5+, everybody in the unit has a 5+ invulnerable save. Then eventually at that 5+ battle round mark, they automatically pass all morale tests. If it's a unit that suffers damage and lowers itself, such as Ravagers, Raiders, any vehicles, basically, the unit is considered to have double the number of wounds remaining up front. There's other abilities that give them invulnerable saves and so on and so forth. They also have a lot of poisoned weapons, which most of them are most of them wound infantry on at least a 4+, regardless of the target's toughness. So, yeah, once again, there's a lot of shit here that is meant to encourage you to be mega aggressive, charge into the teeth of the enemy's guns, and start ripping them to shreds. I use the witches as one example. The army as a whole, even its ranged blasty shit and whatnot, is still designed to play aggressively. Your Ravagers and Raiders have the ability to fly over shit and go at high speed on top of that. A Ravager is 14 inch move when it's fully unwounded. There's a lot of speed there behind the models. So, overall, this is a really fucking badass codex. Now, like I said, we're not going to go deep on it today, but definitely going to be digging into the nitty gritty on it starting in the next episode. Right off the top of my head, once again, probably will not be covering everything in the book in one episode. It will probably be over several episodes time, kind of like the Sisters of Battle codex review I did before, but I do want to hit those nuances and compare some of your options and stuff like that, to really see where the overall power and capability of this army lies. The army's very much built as an anti-horde or anti-light infantry army, but it can totally tackle vehicles and elite units and stuff, and it has a lot of toys in its toolbox to go and wreck pretty much anybody's fucking day. So, overall, great army. Models are really next to impossible to get a hold of right now, though. Including, actually, I found it weird that the Games Workshop website no longer has an Archon model. The Archon model is not just sold out temporarily. You can't even find it on Games Workshop's website. So, yeah, I don't know what that's all about. And they have a bunch of other items that are marked as no longer available. Not temporarily out of stock. They're just marked no longer available. So, time will tell what they end up doing with that, but I think that's all we're gonna do for this week. Like I said, stay tuned for the next episode where we're gonna go a bit deeper on this new codex and stuff. As always, you can follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/theregimentalvoxpodcast, or on Twitter at regimentalvox. Definitely spread the word, tell your friends, let's get this podcast going big, let's do that. So, but as always, thank you guys for listening. I will catch you on the next episode. This is Caleb Meyer signing out for the evening. Have a wonderful week, everyone.